What's new, y'all? This is going to be a little bit of a weird week because I'm flying solo. And I'll explain why kind of as we get through this. It doesn't really have anything to do with the coronavirus so much as it has to do with traveling and who's where and when they're there and how we kind of lined up our time and everything else. So anyway, I just wanted to check in with you guys. I know some folks have a messed up work schedule this week because of what's going on. And what I've got is six things that were just kind of off the top of my head that I figured I'd check in with you guys on, and we'd move on down the road and circle back next week. First thing I got on my list is, what the heck is going on with the coronavirus? I have no idea. This is going to shock a lot of you guys, but being a podcast host, a fishing guide, I have zero medical acumen whatsoever, so I can't really provide you with any information. And we are posted up at the house. We're kind of riding it out just like everybody else does. I was in an airport last Thursday and Friday as this kind of unfolded fast. And I honestly was pretty reassured by what I saw behaviorally by people. And what I mean by that was, you know, you get super attuned to looking at what's going on around you. And so obviously after watching the news for the previous week, I was looking for people sneezing, people coughing, you know, and then touching things. And what I saw was, I could count on one hand the number of people I saw cough or sneeze. People were very courteous about distance. I didn't get bumped into in the airport one time, which is super unusual. Maybe that's just because it wasn't as crowded. I think on my flight home, there were 65 people on a 144-person plane. So it was like what we call the good old days. But I was super reassured. Like, everyone was courteous. Everyone was polite. Everyone was kind. So it was a little bit different. You know, you could tell everyone had a little bit of trepidation about being put into a metal tube with each other. But they all rolled with it, and they were all super nice to the flight attendants and the staff and the check-in people. And I thought, okay, sometimes in the darkest times you find the nicest outcomes. I don't know if that's true or not, but it felt real to me. So I thought that was refreshing. Thought I'd share that with you guys. Second thing I wanted to talk about was, I went on a trip to Louisiana, and I went as part of a BP-10 oil spill 10-year anniversary discussion. So they had a bunch of outdoor writers come in, and they had some folks come in like myself, and we basically talked about how BP affected us wherever we were, which for me in Southwest Florida, it didn't really affect us much beyond economical. Just like, and this is a perfect case, you saw a lot of cancellations and stuff because people thought the Gulf was covered in oil, and they don't really understand that, just like with last year's red tide or 2 years ago's red tide, everyone thought the red tide was everywhere in Florida. So they were canceling the East Coast, they were canceling the Panhandle, they were canceling the Keys, even though it was just affecting a kind of a relatively small section of the Southwest Florida coast. It was big to us, but it was small kind of on a macro scale. So, anyway, I went out to Louisiana. And we had a great evening out there, and had a lot of good discussions, a lot of conversations. Stayed at Ryan Lambert's Lodge. That's Cajun Fishing Adventures. If you ever watched any of the TV fishing shows, they film there. A top-notch operation. And Ryan, I was struck by Ryan's level of engagement and participation in solutions and conservation and solving the problem with what's facing Louisiana. You know, it's a very different ecosystem than what we have here in Florida, but there's also some overlap between how they have to deal with agencies, between how they have to go about getting their solutions done, and a lot of their solutions have to do with water and water quality and where the water's coming from and why the water flow has changed over the years. So I think at its peak, Louisiana was losing a football field of land every hour. And I think that's down to a football field of land every 100 minutes. And they use these things called diversions, where they are actually getting land back now. So they're actually growing land. So it's really a bizarre situation that they have down there. And hopefully in the coming weeks and months, kind of after we settle some of this stuff out, I'm going to have some conversations with some folks around that. Even though we're a super Florida-centric show, I think you guys, A, we've had a lot of folks go out there and fish and enjoy that. And B, I think you guys will appreciate some of the overlap between some of the issues they face and the solutions that they're looking at, and kind of cross-referencing those with some of the stuff that we see down here. So I think that's going to be an interesting thing. It's super, super appreciative of National Wildlife Federation and Vanishing Paradise for putting together that event. It kind of was crazy because we were like, are we going? Are we not going? Are we going? Are we not going? Because of the coronavirus, and it was a smaller event. You know, there weren't a lot of people there. That was intentional. You like the smaller, more intimate events. And I was really happy to be able to go. I was proud to be able to go. A good friend of the show, Bill Cooksey, who's been a longtime supporter of ours. He's been on and done a conversation with us. He kind of put the whole thing together. They had scientists there. They had people that just innately understood the land and the water that they're dealing with locally there. And so that was very, for me, it was a good reality check. And I was telling someone, it's super neat to go out there and see a place like that and appreciate the problems they're going through. But while I'm out there, and we got to fish the second day, and while I'm out there on the boat, you know, we were doing some interviews and stuff, and it was hard for me because all I could keep thinking about was back in Florida. I felt like Leslie Knope when she went to London that time, and she kept remembering Pawnee, even though she was in London and getting an award. That's how I kept feeling. I was like, I was kind of homesick for Florida. So it's a beautiful place and it's a lovely place. And I empathize and sympathize with all they got going on. But man, it was like a reality check for me of all we've got to do here in Florida and the place that we all think is so special and love so much. So, super cool trip. We did not catch many fish. Those guys are just getting back into the swing of things. Obviously they've already had a bunch of cancellations. So it's kind of hard to stay on fish day in, day out when you're not on the water day in, day out. And they were just getting back in the swing, and we did catch some fish, but they aren't at peak operation yet. So that's coming though. I would imagine probably by the time this airs, they've got it dialed in pretty good. And on top of that, unlike us, I was telling those guys, you know, for us, the water changes when you get a hurricane. You know, you'll get a shoal that creates or something like that. But generally speaking, I'm fishing the same potholes, the same cuts, the same areas that I've always fished. There's areas there where they're like, yeah, we used to run our boat around this, or vice versa. Like now they've created a diversion there, so they've got more land there, so they have to run around a spot that used to be a spot they fished. So it's really this strange tension that they've got. I came home. So that's part of the reason we didn't get the podcast recorded with Nate and Emily, is we were supposed to record on Friday afternoon, but I was in Louisiana until too late. So I didn't make it home in time. So I didn't get to Grove Roots Brewing Company till almost 8:30 Friday night, which we had a hangout with some folks who were brave enough to come out into the COVID-19. By the way, did you guys see the meme that says you can sing that to the tune of Come On Eileen? So COVID-19, they came out and we had a little hangout. We didn't have a ton of people there, but it was actually really nice. It was kind of intimate. We got to really have some fun conversations and talk about a whole bunch of stuff. And man, there's nothing I love more than community and being able to connect with people. And that's kind of the thing I'm most worried about and missing the most as we go into like this quote unquote quarantine stage of this whole situation, is what does community look like coming out the backside? So that was one of the reasons I really wanted to make sure I sat down and got something out to you guys to check in and hang in there. So anyway, super cool. To those of you that couldn't make it, you didn't miss much other than a good time hanging out, drinking a few beers and telling stories and laughing a lot. Like we laughed a whole lot. We also saw some t-shirts show up. I got picked on quite a bit about Ray Dunn. So if you're up to speed on any of the Ray Dunn conversations that we've had in our life, that's still throwing some shade at me. I also got picked on quite a bit about the use of the word trill. Guys, I'm using the word trill. It's cool. It's trill. Truly real. I looked it up on Urban Dictionary, so you know it's a real thing. And Tom Haverford uses it in Parks and Rec. So there you go. I don't know what you guys are using to qualify your words, but in my mind, that basically is as good as Merriam-Webster. So we're going to say that the hangout was trill. It was truly real. You cool with that? Also got all the shirts out except a couple, because we had a couple last minute orders. So you should have your conservation isn't convenient shirt in hand. And I'm starting to see some pictures roll in. So if you are self-distancing, I can't remember what they call it. If you're social distancing and you're out on the water or whatever, make sure you snap some pictures. Hashtag conservation isn't convenient. Hashtag cast and blast FL. And tag us in it. We're always looking for more content for social media. So I know you guys get tired of seeing me and my kids and my clients in any of our socials. So Couple more things. I've got three more just little notes that I was like, that's cool enough. I could talk about it. One is a quote from a gentleman. We were talking at the lodge this past week, and we were having a conversation about hogs, because obviously they have hogs there, but we're in Florida. Florida is hog central, y'all. Like, if you don't know about this, we got hogs for days. And one of the things I struggle with on the hog front is the idea of managing it as a game resource versus eradication. And this is just something Travis struggles with. I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying I'm wrong. I do think it's an interesting conversation. I think we need to be okay with some uncomfortableness in those conversations. But I had a hunt this year, and I think it was with Stephen Furness. I'm not positive. If you're listening to this, Steve, send me a message and correct me if I'm wrong, where we had a whole bunch of hogs walk up. Like, I mean, they were 3 to 5 yards from us in the duck blind. And I mean, it was a big group of hogs. Like, you couldn't even see the whole shape of the pigs because they were so close to us. And we debated, we sat there and we talked for a few minutes, and they were completely unfazed by us. And I was like, man, I really don't want to shoot them because then I feel bad if we don't clean them. And that's kind of how I was always raised. I know that's how most of us were raised, right? Like, you don't shoot it if you're not going to eat it. And the conversation that came out in Louisiana by someone at the lodge, and I don't really remember who it was, or I'd attribute it to him, was nothing is ever wasted in nature. And I'm wondering how I feel about that. Like, when you talk about something like hogs, if you really truly wanted to eradicate it, wouldn't you shoot it, leave it, let vultures or whatever pick it over, carrion eaters, scavengers? And does it really go to waste if you shoot it that way? I don't know. That it bothers me. I'll be very honest. It bothers me. We didn't shoot those pigs because of that, and I didn't want to worry about cleaning them. And honestly, the hogs coastally, to me, don't taste as good. You might could turn them into sausage, but really, you're not going to do a whole lot with them because they've been out there in that muck and nastiness and everything else. But it was something that gave me pause. Is sometimes conservation a thing wherein maybe you do leave the carcass out there? I don't know. I'm open to some discussion on that. I think that could actually, I'd love to hear Nate's thoughts on that. So I'll put something in the Facebook group or whatever, and let's get that conversation rolling, because I think it's definitely interesting. Second thing that I saw in the past few days that I wanted to talk about was a friend of mine, Cindy Stites, who we're going to be doing an interview with here soon. She was self-quarantining, social distancing, self-distancing, whatever. I can't ever say it right. And she talked about a Jim Posowitz quote. I think she was reading Fair Chase. I can't remember which book she was reading. Anyway, the quote was, "It is time for hunters, landowners, wildlife managers, and the public trustees to gather around the hunter's fire. It's time once again to look at our movement's compass and contemplate both our direction and future. We have been drifting into a system of wildlife management that advantages commerce, tolerates exclusion, and creates a class system within the North American hunting community. We cannot profess to be advocates of the hunting heritage and engage in these practices. Creating exclusive hunting areas where participants are taken to a shooting ground and told they are hunters is the antithesis of Roosevelt's notion of gaining honor through effort. At their worst, these activities represent illusions of hunting, another ghost dance of the hunt." Oh, and I wrote it down. She said it's from Inherent the Hunt by Jim Posowitz. Anyway, I thought this is a fascinating quote, and it's something that we have, whether we have said this directly or danced around it quite a bit, this is part of the reason we're such advocates for public land. This is part of the reason we're such advocates for recruitment. It's part of the reason we're such advocates for recruitment into real hunting opportunities. I think I used the analogy before of taking the kids to church and they get to jump on the bounce house, and then when they turn 18, you take them into big church and it's quiet. It's kind of similar to me when you take them on the youth hunt and you take them to the greatest of the all-time hunt places, you know, the highest end quota areas. And then when they turn 18, it's like, oh, do you want to go hunt with us? Well, we're going to go out here and kill 2 wood ducks if we're lucky. So I struggle a little bit with where we are in the idea of marketing hunting, selling hunting, and celebrating hunting, that sometimes we don't celebrate all the right things. Which, let me throw this out there too. Really super proud of the Cast and Blast Florida group on Facebook. You guys were killing it on youth turkey season. We had one guy who his son killed 2 jakes with 1 shot. So that was Terry Griffin. Blake, congratulations. That was awesome, buddy. Matt Rowan got his son his first turkey. And I know that Matt was anguishing. We talked back and forth all week about the scouting that went into it and all the work that went into it. But we also had some folks take, I think it was Chris Spencer took some folks out and they didn't see a bird. My son, they saw some birds cross the road. He got to go with my dad to an area I'm not allowed to go into right now. And it's because it's closed to members for the first 3 weeks. And so they saw several turkeys cross the road or off in the far distance, but they couldn't get anything to move. They actually did not hear a gobble the entire day, which has been symptomatic of quite a bit on the kind of the west and southwest region. The birds are being really quiet. So the trophy of hunting really to me is going on the hunt. It's not called killing, it's called hunting. And sometimes we lose track of that. And I think this is the next real conversation we have to have in the conservation space. And I'm not quite sure I'm equipped to have it, but I think it's out there and I think it's in the kind of in the water supply. We love to talk about the food. We love to talk about what we get to bring home and clean at the end of the day. And it's all about the harvest. And I think sometimes we lose track of what's really important and what's not important and how that all folds together. So I think I'm going to go back to that Posowitz quote at some point in the future for another episode, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. Posowitz is he's a little bit hard for me to read sometimes, but man, I really love the depth and the meat of what he says. So super cool stuff. I know Nate is a big Posowitz guy, so we'll have to get his thoughts on that. The last thing I wanted to talk to you guys about is I ordered a book because again, we can't go out into public anymore, right? So I ordered The Death of Expertise by Tom Nichols. And this is from the synopsis on the page. Today, everyone knows everything. With only a quick trip through WebMD or Wikipedia, average citizens believe themselves to be on equal intellectual footing with doctors and diplomats. All voices, even the most ridiculous, demand to be taken with equal seriousness, and any claim to the contrary is dismissed as undemocratic elitism. I think I haven't read it yet, but I've read a lot of reviews on it and I have some friends that have read it and recommended it. I think this is an interesting book within the context of where we are in conservation and conservation broadly, meaning water quality, meaning conservation with sportsmen's groups, meaning conservation writ large, meaning environmentalism. We have a lot of folks that want to be the intellectual superior in this conversation. And man, this is something that's gotten me in some hot water recently for saying, you know, in the spray conversation that we need to really lean into science and trust the tenets of the North American wildlife conservation model. And I think that's kind of what this is echoing, but I haven't disentangled it yet. So I just wanted to throw it out there. I'll put a link to this book in the show notes in case you want to read along with me, because who knows how long this craziness is going to last. That's pretty much everything I had that I wanted to loop you guys in on. I just thought I'd ride to work with you this morning if you're still going to work. Thank you to everyone that is still going to work that is required. Like, I know a lot of folks have the ability to be able to shift to work from home, but I also know we got a lot of small business owners listening to this. They're struggling, suffering. So, man, I feel bad for you guys. If there's anything we can do to help you out, let us know. I also recognize that we have, healthcare professionals and first responders. We have a ton of you guys listening to this. Thank you so much for what you're doing out there. Like, you guys don't get the ability to work from home. You have to go in and serve no matter what it is, be it a hurricane, be it a virus, be it whatever. So thank you so much for choosing a career where you have to put us first. We appreciate it. It doesn't go unrecognized on this landscape. So we will be back as usual next week because we can do this podcast without all being in the same room even. And we'll be back. We'll have a good time. We'll catch up on some of these things I teed up this week. And I've got, I think the first three or four episodes of conversations should be uninterrupted, but at some point there may be an interruption in that as we move down the road. Make sure if you guys, I didn't mention it earlier, if you have any kind of insurance needs, home, life, business, any kind of insurance needs, reach out to Fletcher Hallett, fhallett@hallettins.com, 904-315-5812. Fletcher's been a longtime supporter of the show. We're bringing in some new sponsors and stuff as well as Fletcher, but Fletcher has been with us a long time. And let me say this, anyone and everyone who has reached out to him has been greatly appreciative of either the wisdom he's provided, the quote he's provided, everything else. Like, this guy is the real deal. He's one of us. So thank you, Fletcher, so much for being part of what we do and for offering your wisdom to our listeners that have reached out for insurance. 904-315-5812, double the L's, double the T's, Hallett for all your insurance needs. I ain't singing it. Sorry, y'all. That's pretty much it. I hope you guys have a great week. I hope everyone stays safe and y'all stay woke.